nobody's ever permitted a project like this before. There's never been a project this large done in the U.S.
Gubernatorial candidates spar over who can better advance the gas line plan. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, October 20th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, the Elders and Youth Conference kicks off in Anchorage.
I want to try to help preserve everybody's language because I think everybody in the state deserves that, everybody that's Alaska Native.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Alaska Native elders are five times more likely to be injured in a fall, but there are simple ways for elders to reduce fall-related injuries. Get an eye exam every year. Stay informed about medications that can cause dizziness. Exercise regularly to increase strength and balance, and keep your home clutter-free. This message sponsored by the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium.
Governor Sean Parnell met with Alaska National Guard members yesterday amid ongoing criticism about the administration's response to allegations of sexual assault and other misconduct within the Guard. Parnell spokeswoman Sharon Layhouse says this was a drill weekend and hundreds of Guard members attended the town hall at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson on Sunday. Layhouse said by email that Parnell was addressing changes that are being implemented within the Guard and taking members' questions. She says Guard leadership was not in attendance. A report from the National Guard Bureau's Office of Complex Investigations found that victims did not trust the system because of a lack of confidence in the command. In response, Parnell asked the leader of the Guard to resign. Parnell vowed to implement the report's recommendations to help restore confidence. Just about every major gubernatorial candidate since Jay Hammond has made advancing a gas line part of their platform. This election is no different. With early field work being done on a project, Republican Governor Sean Parnell and unaffiliated candidate Bill Walker are sparring over who can negotiate the best deal and who can close it. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez reports.
How much money do you have to spend to get a handful of dirt? About $500 million if you're talking about samples from the proposed site for a natural gas liquefaction plant in Nikiskie.
So dirt's what you sweep under the rug.
Dick Rains is a geotechnical engineer for Exxon, and he's collecting soil samples to make sure the land is stable enough for a massive construction project.
Yeah, we have a drill bit down there, and we drill out, and then we pull that out and we put on these samplers and we pound them into the ground.
A member of his team shows off the gravel to a scrum of reporters who have been flown down to see people actually working in the field. The deal to get to this point in a gas line project was inked this past year by the state of Alaska, Exxon, BP, Conoco, and TransCanada, and plenty of effort has already gone into permitting and export licensing. But the early engineering work that started this summer was really the first to involve boots on the ground. The scene itself isn't very impressive. A small mobile drill rig to extract the soil, about half a dozen men in safety gear. But all the Alaska LNG employees accompanying reporters to the site are quick to emphasize that the project itself is unprecedented in scope.
Nobody's ever permitted a project like this before. There's never been a project this large done in the U.S.
Steve Butt is a project manager for Alaska LNG. He says even the numbers for the preliminary work match the ambition of a project that involves one gas treatment plant, one liquefaction plant, and 800 miles of pipeline.
You're investing $2+ billion to see if it makes sense to invest another $45 to $65 billion.
Now there's the question of whether the project will get to that point. Just as summer field work is winding down, the gas line is coming up as a political issue.
Bill Walker wants to renegotiate the deal, which will add years of delays. Let's stick with the gas line project that's working, and the governor who's making it happen, Sean Parnell.
Incumbent Republican Sean Parnell is now airing ads promoting his own work on the project and criticizing his unaffiliated opponent. Parnell campaign manager Tom Wright notes that Walker has made statements about the gas line that suggest he would try to change the project.
At one point he called the gas line fatally flawed, and now he's saying, well, we might continue the work of what the governor's doing, We just don't know where he's coming from.
Walker has campaigned heavily on the issue of a gas line in the past, and he's been an advocate for a project in which Alaska has a greater stake. Right now, Exxon, BP, and Conoco control 75% of the project, and Alaska splits its share with TransCanada, with the option of buying some of it back down the road. Walker now says he's willing to operate within the framework established by lawmakers this past year, but that doesn't necessarily mean he won't try to affect the terms of the deal going forward, depending on what those confidential terms are.
I will finish the project. I will not start over. I have no issues, particular issues with the route. I've said that Nikiski is fine. I don't have an issue with that. But I do have an issue with the ultimate decision-making being made by somebody other than Alaska.
While the gas line has been a flashpoint for the two candidates, with Walker even suggesting they hold an hour-long debate just on that issue, gas line experts say companies tend to be more comfortable with an incumbent, even if the two candidates share the same view on a project. Larry Persily, the federal coordinator for an Alaska natural gas project, says that's simply because they know what to expect from a person with whom they've already negotiated.
The oil and gas industry, any business, particularly one that's looking at spending tens of billions of dollars, gets a little nervous when there's political change.
For their part, the oil companies are being politic about the governor's race. Back in Nikiski, Walker and Parnell signs both dot the roadside, leaving the LNG site. Project manager Steve Butt says he's been asked pretty often about how much the governor's race will affect the natural gas project.
It's a fair question. I understand it. But the project is measured in decades, and there's going to be lots of political transitions. As long as all the owners can continue to work in that spirit, you know, we can find a way to make it work.
So far, none of the companies involved in the project have put money behind either candidate. In Anchorage, I'm Alexandra Gutierrez.
The 30th Annual Elders and Youth Conference began today in Anchorage. The conference is held each year at the beginning of the same week as the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention. The gathering is an opportunity for youth to discuss an array of issues relevant to Alaska Natives with support from their elders. The conference got off to another impressive start this year. 17-year-old Devlin Anderstrom was chosen to give the youth keynote address. Not only did he introduce himself in his Tlingit language, he gave his entire speech in it. For 9 minutes, Anderstrom spoke Tlingit to the audience, never once slipping into English until he gave the speech a second time. After the first few minutes, people in the audience turned to each other with wowed faces. They nodded and smiled. Anderstrom's keynote speech was no small feat. There are only a few hundred Tlingit speakers left, and most of them are over the age of 60. Anderstrom, who is a senior at Yakutat High School, learned some of the language when he was young. He moved out of Alaska as a young boy and returned when he was 12.
I've lived in downtown Denver, the suburbs in Northern California, even a small rural community in Nebraska. When I left home, I knew the entire time that home was where I belonged, and it was my place to be.
Growing up, Anderstrom says he spent a lot of time around elders who spoke the language fluently. He began his study of Tlingit in earnest after he moved back home to Yakutat. Just this year, he started taking Lance Twitchell's Tlingit language class through the University of Alaska Southeast. Anderstrom says one of the reasons he has been so dedicated to learning Tlingit is because some cultural values and ideas can only be truly expressed in their original language.
One of them would be Hashagun. So Hashagun, it's our ancestors, and at the same time, it's the future generations, like everything that we were and everything that we will be, and it's just kind of a hard concept to explain.
And it's not just the Tlingit language that Anderstrom feels compelled to learn. He's also Inupiaq, Atna, and Tanacross Athabascan. He's trying to learn all of those languages.
Right now, Tlingit is the language that I know best. It's the only language that I could have made a speech like that in. But I've also started to learn other languages as well, Eyak, Atna, and Inupiaq, and my goal is to learn as much as I can. I want to try to help preserve everybody's language because I think everybody in the state deserves that, everybody that's Alaska Native.
True to the spirit of his role as a youth at the conference, 17-year-old Anderstrom brings optimism to the conversation. He doesn't think that Alaska Native languages can ever be truly lost.
I think language is a big part of culture to me, and it's a really hard hit for any culture to take to lose their language. But I don't think it's necessarily the end game. I don't think it's game over when a language is lost, because like Iyak, a lot of languages can be brought back at least partially through all of the documented resources that we have. We just have to pull together, and I think we can avoid language death altogether.
Anderstrom gave the youth keynote address after Elder Fred John Jr. this morning. The conference room at the Dena'ina Center had 1,300 chairs set up, and nearly all of them were full within an hour of starting the conference. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the Senate race's deluge of negative campaign ads rubs voters the wrong way.
There's no way somebody who's ruined my internet browsing experience for the last 2 months, I'm not going to vote for them. I don't care what platform they're on.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline since 1977. And by the Historic Anchorage Hotel, a mix of historical architecture and modern technology, offers banquet facilities with catering and bartenders, a boutique hotel in the heart of downtown. HistoricAnchorageHotel.com.
The crew of the Alaska Marine Highway System ferry Malaspina participated in a weekend rescue effort in Canadian waters. Alaska Department of Transportation spokesman Jeremy Woodrow says the distress call came in at around 1:30 a.m. Saturday off Campbell River, British Columbia. The Atlantic Harvester 1 was reportedly taking on water at the time of the call.
When the ferry arrived on scene, no vessel could be located, and the ferry deployed its fast rescue boat and was able to rescue one crew member from the water. It did search for other crew members, but no success. Shortly after that time, the Canadian Coast Guard arrived on scene.
Woodrow says the Canadian Coast Guard took charge of the rescued crew member and took over rescue efforts at that time. Lieutenant Greg Menzies, a public affairs officer in the Royal Canadian Navy in Victoria, B.C., said Monday afternoon that the other two crew members remain missing. He says it's unclear at this point what happened to the Atlantic Harvester, a 67-foot landing craft. Menzies says it sank in about 4 minutes. Campbell River Royal Canadian Mounted Police spokeswoman Corporal Poppy Hallam says all three Atlantic Harvester crew members are Campbell River residents. She says the sunken vessel has been located and a dive team search is planned for tomorrow. Woodrow says the Alaska Marine Highway System helps boaters in distress about twice a year on average. He says this is the first he's heard of a ferry responding to a vessel in distress in Canadian waters. Woodrow says ferry crews are trained for rescue response.
And that's one reason why we have these fast rescue boats on board, is to provide rescue operations to other vessels and to the ship itself.
The Malaspina had been on its way from Bellingham, Washington to Ketchikan. The rescue effort delayed its arrival by a few hours, but the ship has since made up the time and is back on schedule. A small community in southeast Alaska is the state's newest city. A state commissioner signed incorporation documents last week for Edna Bay, which has a population of 49. The community is located on Kosciuszko Island, 90 miles northwest of Ketchikan. State officials say Edna Bay is the first community to incorporate since 2004. Election officials earlier this month certified results of an election involving locals in Edna Bay on whether to incorporate. State officials say residents voted 33-6 to incorporate. The Alaska Division of Community and Regional Affairs participated in an organizational meeting with Edna Bay. Officials say the state is helping in establishing a new city council and plans to work with it in coming months. The clock is ticking toward the deadline for a plan for getting Fairbanks into compliance with federal air quality standards. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the state hasn't given up on getting the fine particulate pollution plan in by a December 31st Environmental Protection Agency deadline.
As darkness and cold set in, more people are turning to their wood stoves and boilers for heat, ushering in the season when cold air inversions trap smoke near the ground, tanking air quality. Finding palatable solutions continues to be a challenge, but Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation Division of Air Quality Director Alice Edwards reports progress on a plan to clean up Fairbanks air.
We've been continuing to gather information that will be helpful to finalize the draft plan and get it out to public review.
Edwards points to plan components being considered to reduce fine particulate pollution.
We've been looking, for example, at some new data coming in on the potential benefits of energy logs and looking at dry wood supply in the community, a number of things that we think will be helpful in finalizing the draft plan.
Other components of the plan include the borough wood stove and boiler changeout program, educational outreach on dry wood and clean burning, and plans to increase the availability of natural gas as an alternative heat source. Edwards says the state continues to work with the North Star Borough, which could provide more help now that local voters have struck down a citizen initiative that had banned the borough from regulating heating appliances. The original ban grew out of concern about the borough fining polluters, but Mayor Luke Hopkins says that kind of enforcement doesn't have to be part of the plan.
Can we still burn smarter somehow? Yes. Can we do that without any kind of a fine structure? I think we can. So will we have rules? We might have rules, but, you know, again, the object is to improve our air quality, and I'm glad that we can participate at the local level.
Hopkins says that can start with approaching polluters and laying out options like the changeout program.
Can we help you burn better by this, by A, B, C, or D parts of our plan? Not necessarily citations.
Any new approach will have to go through the borough assembly. Longtime member Guy Satley expresses some trepidation about the prospect.
I thought it was appropriate for the state to continue to do the enforcement. I really don't want to see the cost of it in the borough budget. But the vote is what the vote is, and so we will we'll go on from here. I think we'll continue the existing programs and move slowly to some other proposals the administration may propose.
Air quality measures will have to be fast-tracked to be included in the state's plan, which Edwards anticipates getting a draft of out for public review next month. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to having conversations that help businesses and individuals succeed financially, because an open dialogue can open doors. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Raven Alaska, navigating Alaska's challenging terrain, serving more than 100 communities statewide. Details at raven.com. Raven Alaska, soaring above.
The election is just 2 weeks from tomorrow, and many Alaskans can't wait for the campaigns to end. Alaska is among a handful of states that will decide which party controls the U.S. Senate. Money is flooding in to pay for ads, mailers, and door-to-door legwork in support of Senator Mark Begich and Republican challenger Dan Sullivan. As APRN's Liz Ruskin reports, the results aren't always pretty.
Anchorage resident Georgianne Sprinkle opened her door in College Park this weekend to a stranger who asked for her by name. Her lips were pressed together in controlled fury as the door knocker, Rob Gruss, a labor activist from Ohio, started his patter. When he handed her a flyer supporting the re-election of Senator Begich, Sprinkle kind of lost it.
This has got to be like the fifth time that someone from Begich has got to the damn house. It's so annoying, not to mention phone calls and internet ads and that doesn't even count, Dan Sullivan. You're not going to sway my vote.
Hey, let me let you know that we're
so annoying.
We're with Working Alaska, so we're not with either guy's campaign.
The thing is, Sprinkle, a professional organic gardener, already supports Begich. She needs no convincing. Still, she says the relentless messages follow her everywhere. Even at the supermarket, they're piped into the sound system. And pro-Sullivan door knockers have been by repeatedly, too. Sprinkle says she's so sick of it, it makes her want to not vote. She's hardly the only one fed up with the race. The Begich and Sullivan campaigns have spent more than $14 million so far. Independent groups that support one or the other have spent another $32 million. That comes to more than $180 per likely Alaska voters, and a lot of them don't like the feeling. Heavy internet users seem especially frustrated. Chris Hines, a 33-year-old IT director, says he's getting so many ads about the Senate race, it almost feels like harassment.
But I mean, it's just overload, especially when the ads are all exactly the same over and over and over. It's getting to the point now where I can recite them word for word.
He doesn't tune in to TV or radio, opting for YouTube and Pandora instead. But with every online turn, he's faced with the same few ads, all of them negative, and Hines says devoid of substance.
Most of them are unskippable, so it's infuriating.
Hines says he generally votes Republican, but he says he won't vote for Sullivan or Begich because of their endless ads.
Yeah, they're backfiring, for sure, with me at least, because, you know, there's no way I'm going to, somebody who's ruined my internet browsing experience for the last 2 months, I'm not going to vote for them. I don't care what platform they're on.
UAA journalism professor Mark Trahant says his students despise the online Senate ads, and part of the problem is the ads themselves.
They're traditional negative ad campaigns that work great for television, but will not work with millennials. And I think they're absolutely undermining their own message by using them.
Millennial voters, adults in their mid-30s or younger, expect messages with both humor and meaning, in the style of The Daily Show or John Oliver, Trahant says. Instead, they're getting clubbed over the head with downbeat monotony. Even teens too young to vote are pretty much forced to watch Senate ads whenever they go online. Allison Haynes, a junior at West High, says whether they're online for fun or for schoolwork, the ads are unavoidable.
Maybe even during school, if a teacher wants to show a YouTube video, maybe a science one or a French music video, language video, a little negative ad, Dan Sullivan, Mark Begich, pops up.
More than the sheer number of ads, she says it's the negativity that shocks people her age. Haynes says to them, it smacks of a big taboo, bullying.
It's a huge emphasis teaching anti-bullying campaigns for our generation. So when you see people making negative comments, they're like, well, we've been taught that this is not okay. What's going on with this? Why are politicians exempt from these lessons that we have learned from our schools?
Haynes is a volunteer for Youth Vote, a group organizing an Anchorage-wide mock election. She says young people listen for the sponsorship and know who's paying for the ads.
And it's not just from the candidates, it's from the PACs, right? The lower 48 is coming in, and they're really funding the negative ads, and that's another reason why kids are really disinclined to like those ads, because they're like, well, this is not from Alaska.
The New York Times reports that a digital strategy firm in Virginia this summer bought all of YouTube's inventory in Alaska for the final weeks of the campaign. If the strategy backfires, as Professor Trahant predicts, that could hurt Sullivan. But if millennials are so put off by the barrage of ads that they don't vote at all, that would hurt Begich, since young voters lean Democratic. Until the ads stop, Chris Hines, the IT director, is deploying digital trickery to defend himself. He's using a VPN service at home. Essentially, he's routing his internet traffic through another country, usually the Netherlands, so no one can see he's in Alaska. It's slower, and it means he has to sit through a lot of ads in Dutch, but he doesn't care as long as they're not about Begich or Sullivan. In Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
It seems to be fairly universal that everyone is growing weary of the constant barrage of attack ads. To help us lighten the mood a bit as we race to the November 4th finish line, KSKA's Dave Waldron found a way to bring levity to the attack.
We're in the final stretch of the political season, and just about everyone, including the politicians, are sick of all the negative ads. Patrick Race is the creator of Alaska Robotic News, a political satire program based in Juneau. He's pretty familiar with attack ads.
I was once asked to make an ad about Frank Murkowski, where he was going to be animated and like smoking a cigar over a baby carriage, and I didn't get it, and it didn't resonate with me, and I didn't want to do it.
Cigars and babies aside, Race says he probably still wouldn't have done it. He thinks most attack ads are just pure gibberish.
It's a creation of a meaningless language which encourages unclear thought and reasoning. That's exactly what attack ads are. They become so simplified that they have no meaning.
So I decided to enlist Race to come up with some attack ads that might actually make sense, or if nothing else, were funny.
I think if I was running a campaign right now, what I would do is I would do only positive advertising.
Oh, I like it. We could do like a positive attack ad.
Senator Begich likes to point out his track record of protecting Alaska. But what he doesn't want you to know is that he's also a really great father and husband. Alaska can't afford Mark Begich's modesty. Vote Dan Sullivan. You might have heard Dan Sullivan say that he's endorsed by Senator Lisa Murkowski. But now polls show he's also gained the support of most Alaskans. So which is it, Dan? Alaska doesn't need flip-floppers. Vote Mark Begich.
I like the twist on it, of it being a positive attack ad. But I'm not sure who I'm supposed to hate.
Maybe we could attack ourselves while attacking our opponent.
Actually, that's something you could do. I think if you did if we're talking about things that would be effective on the actual political landscape, I think making a tongue-in-cheek negative ad about yourself would have some potential.
Alaskans need to know the truth about Senator Begich. When he was 13, he missed a week of school to get his tonsils removed. The result? A devastating 97% attendance record that semester. You should probably also know that he rarely finishes his crossword puzzles without asking his wife for help. Mark Begich, telling you the truth, even when it hurts. Dan Sullivan needs you to know some things before you vote for him. He owns every Elton John album, and he's totally secure with that. He also rigged his SATs back in high school, only he rigged them to drop his scores so the other kids wouldn't feel dumb. Dan Sullivan, brilliant to a fault.
And then, your ad needs to be paid for by some sort of nebulous facade organization.
The preceding ad was paid for by the people of Alaska at 452. What are the resident item?
That humorous take on political advertising was produced by KSKA's Dave Waldron and Kristen Dugan. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can also follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Jenny Canfield in Anchorage, Layla Carey in Ketchikan, and Dan Bross in Fairbanks. APRN's Alexander Gutierrez and Liz Ruskin reported from Anchorage. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron, Josh Edge is our web producer, and I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Nana Regional Corporation and Tech Alaska, celebrating 25 years of resource development and partnership at the Red Dog Mine. Salmon are all around us. They're in our rivers and our freezers. They fuel our economies and keep Alaskans connected to our traditions, our families, and our friends. The Salmon Project celebrates all the ways salmon are interwoven with our Alaskan lives. Learn more about the project and find out how you can be involved at salmonproject.org or find them on Facebook. Salmon, it runs deep in all Alaskans. This message sponsored by the Salmon Project. Ready to quit smoking, using e-cigarettes or other tobacco? Alaska's Tobacco Quitline can help with free, confidential coaching and support services through the telephone and online, and now introducing Text to Quit. Text to Quit helps you use medications correctly, manage urges, and prevent relapse, all from your mobile phone. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com for more information. This message is sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Prevention and Control Program.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.